European Consortium for the Certificate of Attainment in Modern Languages. English Language. Listening. Level B2.
Part 1.
You are going to hear a man introducing a famous botanic garden. While listening, choose the correct answer. The first one, 0, has been done for you as an example. You are going to hear the text twice. Do as much as you can the first time and finish your work the second time. Finally, you are going to have 60 seconds to complete your answers. Now you have 2 minutes to study the sentences below.
Now listen to the recording.
Welcome to the University Botanic Garden. We're standing at the moment by the main gate at the junction of Trumpington Road and Bateman Street. My name's John Parker and I'm the director. And for today, I'm going to be your guide to the garden created by John Stevens Henslow. In this tour, we're going to visit a small part of this very large garden. And we're going to look for the vision of John Henslow, its founder. From this, we'll explore how he passed that vision on to his favoured student, Charles Darwin. It was this vision that moulded Darwin's life's work. Well, history will remember John Henslow for one thing, and that was for a letter he wrote recommending Charles Darwin as the naturalist most suitable for accompanying Captain Fitzroy on the voyage of the Beagle. But there's much more to him than that. John Henslow was noted for the breadth of his knowledge. In fact, his knowledge was so broad that one of Charles Darwin's friends said about him, "Oh, Professor Henslow, he's the man that knows everything." He was a mathematician. He had a lifelong interest in natural history. And also, with the newfound science of mineralogy, the scientific study of minerals. He was so influential here that at the age of 27, he became the professor of mineralogy. 2 years later, though, he was also promoted to become professor of botany. So he was a man versed in all the natural sciences, from geology through to botany, and with mathematics as well. He was indeed the man who knew everything. Now, what Darwin found when he was talking to Henslow was this immense breadth of understanding. And one of the things that Henslow was talking about during Darwin's life here in Cambridge was the creation of a plant collection for research and for teaching. What we have here is the result of that. We have a botanic garden now laid out for teaching and research, but with an added dimension that it was for everyone. And in order to make it for everyone, it had to be beautiful too. Henslow believed that education was for everybody, and if you laid the garden out in a beautiful way, then it could be accessible for the whole of the community, not just for the university. So he had this design created and laid out by his horticultural curator, Andrew Murray, and it was put together between 1846 and finished more or less by 1850. What we're going to do first is to move from here, what's now the main gate, to the old main gate on Trumpington Road. And to do this, we walk ahead until we meet the outside path of the old garden next to the notice board ahead of you. At this point, if you turn right, then you can walk through the trees around this sinuous outside path till you get to the old main gate, which is about 200 yards away. Now we've reached the old main gate. Now this main gate was brought to the garden from the old botanic garden in the centre of Cambridge. The gates date from 1762, which makes them typical of the gates that you find along the backs of the colleges. But look round where you've come. The path came through a belt of trees. And between the outside path and the boundary of the garden, all the way round Henslow's garden, is this wonderful belt of flowering plant trees. As you walk round the boundary, you find the plants are arranged in family order. This way you go all the way round the outside of the garden in a very strict order. And that order is determined by the most complete book about plants that Henslow knew. And that book was written by a Swiss botanist called Alphonse de Candolle. And it's on the basis of this book that this garden was constructed. But notice here, if you turn and face away from the old main gate, you'll see the main walk, the only straight lines in this garden. The rest of it is a garden of curves. Well, look at the trees along this main walk. What do you see? All of these trees are conifers, the cone-bearing trees. And they're of different sorts, redwoods, pines, cedars. And they're spread along this main straight walk, with not a single flowering plant tree amongst them. No beeches, no ashes, no oaks, just conifers. So we've got a very distinct structure here in the garden. Now we're going to walk from here to show a bit more of this structure. To get there, carry on walking along the outside path for about 50 yards, and then on your left you will see a complex array of beds and hedges. Turn in and move to the centre of the systematic beds. So switch off now and switch on again when you're in the middle of the systematic beds.
Now you have 30 seconds to check and complete your work.
Listen to the recording again.
Welcome to the University Botanic Garden. We're standing at the moment by the main gate at the junction of Trumbeaton Road and Bateman Street. My name's John Parker and I'm the director, and for today I'm going to be your guide to the garden created by John Stevens Henslow. In this tour, we're going to visit a small part of this very large garden, and we're going to look for the vision of John Henslow, its founder. From this, we'll explore how he passed that vision on to his favoured student, Charles Darwin. It was this vision that moulded Darwin's life's work. Well, history will remember John Henslow for one thing, and that was for a letter he wrote recommending Charles Darwin as the naturalist most suitable for accompanying Captain Fitzroy on the voyage of the Beagle. But there's much more to him than that. John Henslow was noted for the breadth of his knowledge. In fact, his knowledge was so broad that one of Charles Darwin's friends said about him, "Oh, Professor Henslow, he's the man that knows everything." He was a mathematician. He had a lifelong interest in natural history. And also with the newfound science of mineralogy, the scientific study of minerals. He was so influential here that at the age of 27, he became the professor of mineralogy. 2 years later, though, he was also promoted to become professor of botany. So he was a man versed in all the natural sciences, from geology through to botany, and with mathematics as well. He was indeed the man who knew everything. Now, what Darwin found when he was talking to Henslow was this immense breadth of understanding. And one of the things that Henslow was talking about during Darwin's life here in Cambridge was the creation of a plant collection for research and for teaching. What we have here is the result of that. We have a botanic garden now laid out for teaching and research, but with an added dimension that it was for everyone. And in order to make it for everyone, it had to be beautiful too. Henslow believed that education was for everybody, and if you laid the garden out in a beautiful way, then it could be accessible for the whole of the community, not just for the university. So he had this design created and laid out by his horticultural curator, Andrew Murray, and it was put together between 1846 and finished, more or less, by 1850. What we're going to do first is to move from here, what's now the main gate, to the old main gate on Trumpington Road. And to do this, we walk ahead until we meet the outside path of the old garden next to the notice board ahead of you. At this point, if you turn right, then you can walk through the trees around this sinuous outside path till you get to the old main gate, which is about 200 yards away. Now we've reached the old main gate. Now, this main gate was brought to the garden from the old botanic garden in the centre of Cambridge. The gates date from 1762, which makes them typical of the gates that you find along the backs of the colleges. But look round where you've come. The path came through a belt of trees. And between the outside path and the boundary of the garden, all the way round Henslow's garden, is this wonderful belt of flowering plant trees. As you walk round the boundary, you find that plants are arranged in family order. This way, you go all the way round the outside of the garden in a very strict order. And that order is determined by the most complete book about plants that Henslow knew. And that book was written by a Swiss botanist called Alphonse de Candolle. And it's on the basis of this book that this garden was constructed. But notice here, if you turn and face away from the old main gate, you'll see the main walk, the only straight lines in this garden. The rest of it is a garden of curves. Well, look at the trees along this main walk. What do you see? All of these trees are conifers, the cone-bearing trees. And they're of different sorts, redwoods, pines, cedars. And they're spread along this main straight walk with not a single flowering plant tree amongst them. No beeches, no ashes, no oaks, just conifers. So we've got a very distinct structure here in the garden. Now we're going to walk from here to show a bit more of this structure. To get there, carry on walking along the outside path for about 50 yards, and then on your left you will see a complex array of beds and hedges. Turn in and move to the centre of the systematic beds. So switch off now and switch on again when you're in the middle of the systematic beds.
Now you have 1 minute to check and complete your work. This is the end of part one.
Part two.
You are going to hear two people talking about the experiences they had with famous people. While listening, complete the sentences with a few words. The first one, zero, has been done for you as an example. You are going to hear the text twice. Do as much as you can the first time and finish your work the second time. Finally, you are going to have 60 seconds to complete your answers. Now you have 90 seconds to study the sentences below.
Now listen to the recording.
Well, Joanna, you'll never guess what happened to me on my last trip to England.
What?
Well, I had a long day's journey, travelling home, and I started off in Heathrow Airport.
Now, have you been to the new terminal at Heathrow, Terminal 5?
No, I always fly to Bristol.
Okay, well, I was at this new terminal, and I had to do the usual thing. You check in, show your passport, and then they have security. Now, at this new terminal, all the security machines, the x-ray, all of the stuff they do, it's all in the same place. Mm-hmm. So all the passengers have to go through the same gate. And I thought, okay, I was ready to wait. I was ready to be bored, ready to take a long time doing this. So I went over, took my shoes off, you know, took my belt off, got in the line. The line, I got closer and closer to the x-ray machine. I got my bag, took my coat off. You know how you kind of get
that's
ready
right,
for these
yep.
things. And I was watching the people, and we were queuing in one of those queues that's shaped like a snake. You
like
know,
in where, Disneyland.
Yeah, where it goes round yeah. and round and round and round. So yeah. you think
you're there.
Mm-hmm. But in fact, you've got to wait for ages and ages. Anyway, as you snake around, you get to look in the faces of the people who are waiting, mm-hmm. you know, because the queues.
Meet them again and again.
Yeah. Mm. And so I was smiling at the people, and I turned around to see how long the queue was behind me, and I saw somebody I knew.
Well,
I thought, I know this guy. And I wanted to say, you know, to say hello to him. But then I realized I didn't know who he was at all. But I recognized him because he was famous.
No, yeah. really?
It was the famous English film actor Hugh Grant.
Oh,
can you believe that?
Gosh, he is so gorgeous.
And the funny thing was, he's one of the most famous people you could ever see in an airport. Nobody went over to him.
Really?
Nobody said hello. And he was trying really hard to look like an ordinary person. He was wearing dark sunglasses.
Oh, yes, that makes you very inconspicuous,
yeah,
the dark
sunglasses.
Yes, inside.
And he was looking at his watch every 5 seconds, trying to look very bored. But the funny thing was, all the other people in the queue were whispering to each other. And I could see people nudging each other and pointing and saying, "It's Hugh Grant. Where? Over there." The funniest thing. And I guess I looked at the departures board to see where the flights were going. And there was a flight to Los Angeles not long after my flight. So I think it was Hugh Grant going back to Los Angeles.
Oh, that is so cool.
And when I got home, I told my family, and my kids just said, "Dad, did you get his autograph?"
Yeah.
And I said, "No, of course not." And they were angry.
Yes, yeah. Gosh, you can imagine the whole row of people with their socks off rushing yeah. back.
What about you? Have you ever seen a famous person? Met a famous person like that?
Well, not really. Where I come from, there used to be a BBC weatherman.
That's pretty good.
Who lived in the same village.
It's not quite Hugh Grant.
Well,
okay.
No, it wasn't. And now, you must have heard of Dawn French.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, her mother lives in our village.
Not bad.
And so apparently every so often Dawn French turns up. Uh-huh. And apparently she's really grumpy.
Really?
Yeah, because she's a comedian, isn't she? So she's a really funny lady, but I expect you get fed up being funny all the time.
Mm-hmm. You would know.
Well, yes, I know. Yes, yeah. So, no, I haven't really met any famous people. Not that I can remember, though, because, of course, I'm so old. I'm forgetting things now.
Oh, dear.
Now you have 30 seconds to check and complete your work.
Listen to the recording again.
Well, Joanna, you'll never guess what happened to me on my last trip to England.
What?
Well, I had a long day's journey travelling home, and I started off in Heathrow Airport. Now, have you been to the new terminal at Heathrow, Terminal 5?
No, I always fly to Bristol.
Okay, well, I was at this new terminal, And I had to do the usual thing. You check in, show your passport, and then they have security. Now, at this new terminal, all the security machines, the x-ray, all of the stuff they do, it's all in the same place. Mm-hmm. So all the passengers have to go through the same gate. And I thought, okay, I was ready to wait. I was ready to be bored, ready to take a long time doing this. So I went over, took my shoes off, you know, took my belt off, got in the line. I got closer and closer to the x-ray machine. I got my bag, took my coat off. You know how you kind of get
that's
ready
right,
for these
yep.
things. And I was watching the people, and we were queuing in one of those queues that's shaped like a snake. You
like
know,
in where, Disneyland.
Yeah, where it goes round yeah. and round and round and round. So yeah. you think
you're there
mm-hmm. but in fact you've got to wait for ages and ages. Anyway, as you snake around, you get to look in the faces of the people who are waiting, mm-hmm. you know, because the queue.
Meet them again and again.
Yeah. Mm. And so I was smiling at the people, and I turned around to see how long the queue was behind me, and I saw somebody I knew. Well, I thought, I know this guy. And I wanted to say, you know, to say hello to him. But then I realized I didn't know who he was at all. But I recognized him because he was famous.
No, yeah. really?
It was the famous English film actor, Hugh Grant.
Oh,
can you believe that?
Gosh, he is so gorgeous.
And the funny thing was, he's one of the most famous people you could ever see in an airport. Nobody went over to him.
Really?
Nobody said hello. And he was trying really hard to look like an ordinary person. He was wearing dark sunglasses.
Oh, yes, that makes you very inconspicuous.
Yeah,
dark sunglasses inside.
And he was looking at his watch every 5 seconds, trying to look very bored. But the funny thing was, all the other people in the queue were whispering to each other. And I could see people nudging each other and pointing and saying, it's Hugh Grant. Where? Over there. The funniest thing. And I guess I looked at the departures board to see where the flights were going. And there was a flight to Los Angeles not long after my flight. I think it was Hugh Grant going back to Los Angeles.
Oh, that is so cool.
And when I got home, I told my family, and my kids just said, Dad, did you get his autograph?
Yeah.
And I said, no, of course not. And they were angry.
Yes, yeah. Gosh, you can imagine the whole row of people with their socks off rushing yeah. back.
What about you? Have you ever seen a famous person? Met a famous person like that?
Well, not really. Where I come from, there used to be a BBC weatherman.
That's pretty good.
Who lived in the same village.
It's
but,
not quite Hugh Grant.
Well,
okay.
No, it wasn't. And now, you must have heard of Dawn French.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, her mother lives in our village.
Not bad.
And so apparently every so often Dawn French turns up and apparently she's really grumpy.
Really?
Yeah, because she's a comedienne, isn't she? So she's a really funny lady, but I expect you get fed up being funny mm-hmm. all the time.
Mm-hmm. You would know.
Well, yes, I know. So, no, I haven't really met any famous people. Not that I can remember, though, because, of course, I'm so old, I'm forgetting things now.
Oh, dear.
Now you have 1 minute to check and complete your work. This is the end of the listening task.